Okay, the excuse me, the previous program was Neurodiversity Experts Talk, and that is hosted and produced by Natalie Tandaway, heard on Fridays at 2 p.m. It is now 2:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic. That's coming up. Stay tuned. WBAI New York.
That you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for February 12th, 2021. When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
What is the pinker plant, and how do you stop one?
Find out now on Ecologic. We were all glad when Governor Cuomo banned fracking in New York in 2014.
Right. Yeah, that ban was great, but it wasn't enough. There's so much fracking infrastructure going on all over the state. In fact, there's a hearing on March 10th about the liquefied natural gas port to speak against it in Greenpoint. Check our website, ecoradio.org, for details.
Industry is always trying to create new markets, and gas peaker plants are even more expensive than nuclear.
And we sure don't need that gas.
Efficiency and renewables are the answer.
And we only have a short time to turn all this around. And that brings us to our guest today, Elaine O'Brien. So hi, Elaine. Please introduce yourself so we have a voice to go with your name.
Sure. This is Elaine O'Brien. Thanks so much for having me on. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes.
Cool. Yep. Okay, and let's dig in. So how did you find out about this plant? So what's the origin of all this?
Okay, of course, yeah. So I'm a member of Queens Climate Project. It's a group in Jackson Heights, Queens, mostly based in Jackson Heights, Queens, but we are hoping to expand and, you know, branch out more into other neighborhoods in Queens. But it's just a local neighborhood group that I began with a couple other neighbors in 2019, which sounds like a long time ago at this point, but it really wasn't. And I, you know, through working with this group, I had met Shay O'Reilly, who is an organizer with the Sierra Club. And Shay had been mentoring and helping our group sort of shape our outreach and clue us into certain projects and what was happening in our communities. And he told our group about the NRG plant in Astoria. Since then, I, you know, others in my group and Queens Climate Project have also become really vocal and, you know, in fighting back the development of this plant. But I've also mm-hmm. become more involved in the No Astoria Plant No Energy Astoria Plant Coalition, which is a group of many other different groups who all share the common goal of stopping this, basically like the renovation and the reconfirmation of a peaker plant in Astoria, Queens, which obviously, you know, anyone who follows this stuff even at all knows that we have to start phasing these peaker plants and fossil fuel infrastructure out of New York and out of the United States for sure. But the development of this plant would more or less embed fossil fuel infrastructure into you know, into our system for another 20 years. And so
let me ask you, it sounds cute, a peaker plant. What is a peaker plant?
Right. So a peaker plant, it's definitely helpful to know what that is. So peaker plants are different from typical plants in that they are only meant to operate during what is referred to as peak hours or peak times. So really, like, only about 6% of the year are when peaker plants turn on. But their purpose is, like, when there is a greater demand for energy. Like, commonly used example is when there's a heat wave in the summertime and people crank up their air conditioners. The idea is that our regular energy system cannot tolerate the increased demand. And so these peaker plants are automatically set to turn on and provide extra energy during that time of greater demand. So their purpose is just to operate minimally, right? However, right. The way they function is that they end up, they're much even dirtier than a regular, you know, base load fossil fuel burning plant, you know? And so they, you know, I mean, some of the existence, it's like, and referring back to some of the details about peaker plants in general, it's like they actually, their NOx emissions are greater, their CO2 and particulate matter is greater. And most of the peaker plants in New York, you know, they're dotted all along the Astoria waterfront, and there's a few that are also in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, you know, but they're often located in frontline communities. And, you know, that's, I guess, a kind of like an environmental justice term used for, you know, neighborhoods that are often neglected and economically a little bit more vulnerable, and usually in black and brown neighborhoods. And, you know, the areas of Astoria and certainly in the Bronx and parts of Brooklyn are all areas that, you know, where, you know, these communities of color and communities that are lower income suffer the brunt of the effects of peaker plants that are meant to, you know, ensure that people all over New York have, you know, enough power to generate their air conditioners and everything else. And so people in those neighborhoods tend to suffer the consequences, as in much higher asthma rates, much higher cancer rates. You know, the dangers of living near a peaker plant, especially now, as we all know, Queens has been hit very hard by the COVID crisis, and mm-hmm. the areas around those peaker plants where people have higher rates of asthma already, you know, throw in a respiratory virus, and you know, you have a very sick, you know, potentially very sick community. And then in 2021, someone wants to, you know, enhance the, you know, the presence of a peaker plant, you know, in that same neighborhood, it's just egregious. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit about what a peaker plant is. But, you know, they're kind of a newer concept. Like the NRG plant in Astoria, I believe is around 50 years old, but most of the peaker plants that are also along the waterfront in Astoria are about 20 years old. And the whole peaker plant concept developed shortly after the Enron scandal in California, because there were these, as you know, the citizens in California understood them, rolling blackouts that were actually, as we all know now, based upon fraud, right? Based upon Enron trying to, you know, shut down their generators so that they could have these, you know, rate increases. But that idea was sort of taken by the fossil fuel industry, and they kind of ran with it, and they were like, oh, well, we have to increase our, you know, peaker, like we have to, you know, build more peakers so that we can prevent blackouts. So that was
well,
the impulse
I
behind
bet
them.
Ben has something to say about that.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, peaker plants only operate a few days for the whole year. So they build this thing to use it for a few days. Dan Scammer on the Hudson River is another example of a peaker plant. And if they would simply reduce the usage of electricity, they would not need a peaker plant. It's really that simple. Energy efficiency, elimination of energy waste, it is a much smarter way to go. And it makes sense, but it doesn't make dollars for the utilities. Mm-hmm. And that's why the utilities ignore that. But every time you switch to an LED light bulb, for example, you're cutting down on the need for peaker plants. Every time you use an Energy Star air conditioner or refrigerator, you're cutting down on the need for peaker plants. And because New Yorkers are doing that anyway, we don't need as many peaker plants, and we certainly don't need new ones.
Yeah,
and when you come in your dishwasher in the middle of the night as opposed to the prime hours.
Yeah.
What does the community have to say about all this?
Good question. So, as is very common for fossil fuel, you know, for corporate fossil fuel, you know, companies, it was a very opaque and limited public engagement process. Letting people, folks in the neighborhood know about this plant and also how people could submit comments and engage with NRG about it, you know, how they could even find out what its purpose was and what their plans were. And, you know, as we all know, like every, you know, sort of public style forum is somewhat limited right now because of the COVID crisis. But what was happening, I think, this is, you know, some of this is based on what I'd heard from other colleagues in the coalitions I'm a part of, but that there was sort of a very vague and like quiet little process of publicly polling the area, you know, residents and saying like, oh, okay, how do you all feel about, you know, what do you prefer? You know, union jobs, which is what they're the carrot that energy is sort of dangling in front of people, or rolling blackouts, you know, and I might be speaking hyperbolic because this is how, you know, hyperbolically how, you know, a lot of us have discussed this issue, because it does feel like that's how they're presenting it. That it's like, you know, you're only going to have rolling blackouts and frequent brownouts if there is a, you know, if we don't develop this plant, but if we do, we're going to give, you know, all these great union jobs are going to be, you know, we're going to be able to provide them. And so, you know, when you put it that way, you know, some people might say, okay, well, I get it. You know, we need our energy and we all want jobs. So sure, go for it. But that's just one piece. When you look closely at what's going on, you know, they're not providing information about the plant in a way that enables people to consciously support the situation. And there have been a couple of, well, for one, we've had, you know, two of the coalitions I'm a part of have, we had a march in September. That was one action that we had taken. Another was a bike rally that, you know, my group formed that, you know, where we rode from Jackson Heights through Astoria and viewed all the various peaker plants and landed at the energy plant. We had a rally there. And then just recently, like last week, there was we did a teach-in slash like Jeopardy style, the Zoom game show, essentially educating people about the plant. And the more we talk with residents who are learning about what it is that is happening, I mean, they're all aware that their neighborhood has, poor air quality. Anyone within a few miles of that area understands this, and they know this, and they know that their community suffers from elevated asthma rates and in general really struggles with respiratory illnesses. And so, if you tell them, like, oh, and we have another one on the way, they don't want it, And so another sort of tool that I found Energy has been using to sort of squash any sort of real engagement are these very sort of opaque, public style forums where it's like, it's more like webinar style. So like people end up, you can't actually like watch and engage the way we could on a Zoom and discuss, what's going on, but rather like you kind of like have to call in and wait on hold and then wait 2 hours after a big long slideshow presentation and then finally submit a comment or a question to the moderator, who is Energy spokesperson.
That's so funny.
And there were two of those, and one was in July, and it was very poorly attended because I don't think anyone knew about it. And then the second one that they had in January, it was flooded with opposition to the plant. I listened to that one and was able to offer a comment, and others who are, folks in the neighborhood and folks who are up to speed and just know that this is bad for Queens, we're also able to discuss. But, yeah.
It's really, really hard during COVID to organize. I give you so much credit. I heard about that Jeopardy show, too. So you mentioned that NRG kept talking about jobs. What's their argument, and what's your answer to their argument about things like that? What are they pushing as far as why they should be allowed to build this thing?
And that is, unfortunately, a really attractive proposition, is this idea that, union jobs would be available by way of this plant, and true, there is a construction element which would provide contracts to, primarily, I'm sure, like union, union construction companies, but the only...
Maybe not union.
Maybe not, right. I mean, that's the thing, it's like, there's always like a lobby going on, between energy companies and unions to sort of push them to support their projects because, that's a big part of what, a union is meant to do is to help them gather opportunities for contracts. But, union workers and non-union workers, all workers deserve to work, on and for something that is A, safe, and B, that could be of benefit to their communities, it's like as someone just wrote in the chat, it's like false alternatives, that it's like you have the choice between no job or a job, building something that is harmful. And in terms of permanent positions, there's only 10 to 20 permanent positions available after the construction of the plant. So it's not like the plant itself will be this giant, job creator, but it'll actually, just offer a handful of jobs, to a handful of people and not necessarily, residents of the neighborhood, as we all know. The job thing is very much a false, I feel like it's just sort of one of the sort of bargaining tools that is often utilized that is usually not as much benefit as they say.
And usually parts of the country that have high pollution levels also have high poverty levels.
Exactly.
When you're thinking about West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, and anywhere. And so there's an environmental justice issue beyond just whether they're citing this in a poor neighborhood or not, because the pollution goes everywhere, messes up people's health costs go up, and the best and brightest leave. So it hurts the neighborhood to have these things. It's so stupid.
And the unions could be working on cleaner energy, same skills of construction, right? A little bit of training maybe for when the implementation happens, but so much better for any neighborhood.
And it's a proven fact that green jobs, green industry creates more green jobs.
More jobs, period.
In fact, the wind turbines, you know, Beacon Wind, mm-hmm. with the connection in Astoria is supposed to supply, you know, I think 1,200, you know, good union and, you know, like permanent positions. You know, same with the proposal renewable Rikers, turning Rikers Island, you know, once it closes into an actual renewable, you know, source of energy. You know, these are all projects that are long term. These are, you know, jobs that are long term. And these are jobs that are, you know, actually, you know, can guide us. At the very least, don't poison the air, right? You know, it's like having a job and, you know, and saying like, well, I need a job. You know, I guess I have to take this job that poisons the air around me. You know, it's just so cruel. And it is a false choice.
Cruel. That's a great description.
How much did the lobbyists spend to try and force this thing on people?
The reports say 600,000.
Oh my goodness!
Very significant lobbying effort to try and get you know, folks on their side, but it actually. You know, this is probably the first project I've ever worked on where elected officials are on our side in a really major way. And every elected official from city council to assembly to state senate has.
So how do people get involved? Give us your website.
Really active, yeah. So I feel blessed to have, you know, to have, be on the team with them, you know, but it's a new situation.
How do people join your team?
Yeah.
Give your website.
How? I'm sorry. I thought you said that people. So what I can put a couple of like links out there. You know, once we switch formats.
Okay, Elaine. I'm gonna stop right here because they say time flies when you're having fun, and unfortunately we are out of time. We will record more of this discussion in the Ecologic Green Room after the show. Now, thanks to J.K. Canepa, an Ecologic Collective member who joined us today as co-host. Thank you, J.K. Elaine, can you tell us quickly, just a few words, how do people get in touch with your group?
The best way to get in touch with our group is to visit queensclimateproject.org.
Okay, and that will be on our website.
It's so already there.
To join our email list to be informed when the shows are posted, those of you online, you can go to www.ecoradio.org. And again, please sign up for our mailing list.
And tune in 2 weeks on February 26th when we talk about radioactivity and your health.
And to listen to this show again or any of our past shows and get environmental news on a variety of topics, go to our website, www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org. Now, there are many video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI.
Go to www.givetowbai.org and put eco-logic in the search box in the upper right corner.
It's a win-win.
And a big thanks to our great engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
I'm J.K. Canepa.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you in 2 weeks at 2:30 p.m.
Solar power, inexpensive energy,
give me the warm power of the sun. Give me
KFW Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Donald Trump's legal team is presenting what's expected to be a brief defense of the twice-impeached former president at this hour. House impeachment managers used their final day of arguments yesterday to make the case that the insurrectionists who attacked the Capitol were not acting on their own. Trump's team, meanwhile, called on senators to immediately dismiss the impeachment, which they called a, quote, blatantly unconstitutional act of political vengeance. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said today that schools can safely open as long as a range of precautions are in place, offering a roadmap for a return to classrooms that have been shuttered for nearly a year. When infection rates are higher, the agency recommends the shifting to a combination of in-person and remote learning to minimize the number of people in school buildings at any given time. And while the CDC reiterated that states should prioritize teachers for vaccination, the agency said it is not a prerequisite for reopening. Trump was far sicker with COVID-19 last October than previously reported, with extremely depressed blood oxygen levels and compromised lungs due to viral pneumonia, according to the New York Times. Trump was taken to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center after officials believed he would need to be put on a ventilator. Trump ultimately recovered after an aggressive treatment that included an antibody cocktail, which at the time was unavailable to members of the general public. According to a spokesperson for the Department of Defense, those tasked with oversight of authorizing the launch of nuclear weapons did not realize on January 6th that then-Vice President Mike Pence's military aide, carrying the so-called nuclear football, the nuclear codes and instructions, was in harm's way during the insurrection at the Capitol. Only after U.S. Strategic Command saw video testimony at the Senate impeachment trial showing Pence, his Secret Service agents, and the officer carrying the duplicate briefcase containing nuclear launch information running down a flight of stairs, only then did they realize the danger Pence faced inside the Capitol. People traveling on subway systems in major U.S. cities are being exposed to unsafe amounts of air pollution. Tiny airborne particles, probably thrown up by train brakes or the friction between train wheels and rails, are inhaled by riders during rush hours in major subway systems, including Metro in Washington, D.C., and the New York subway. The levels of these tiny specks of pollution, called PM2.5, were well above nationally determined safe daily levels of 35 micrograms per cubic meter in each of the cities. New York's Metropolitan Transit Authority system overall had 251 micrograms per cubic meter, followed by Washington, D.C., with 145 micrograms per cubic meter. Concentrations of hazardous metals and organic particles at New York's Christopher Street station had an incredible particle pollution level of 1,499 micrograms per cubic meter, a level more commonly found near a large wildfire or during a building demolition. World-renowned pianist Chick Corea passed away Tuesday. According to a post on his Facebook page, he composed jazz standards like Spain and 500 Miles High and delivered electrifying live performances over his nearly 60-year professional career. Currently in Washington, it's cloudy and 30. In New York, it's cloudy and 28 degrees. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.